Welcome back to Through the Word. I'm your host, Peyton Jones, and today we'll be in Judges chapter 12. Here we have the first outbreak of civil war. By no means the last one in Israel's history, but here we see that without God, the people can't even hold themselves together. If you remember from chapter 10, Jephthah was the son of a man named Gilead who had 30 other sons. He was also the son of a prostitute. Now, 30 of these sons each founded a city, and so the region of Gilead was a network of cities that was dominated by a people called the Ammonites, and they repressed and oppressed the Gileadites. Now, when Jephthah, the bastard son of a prostitute, didn't get a city like his other brothers and sisters, or any rights as a son, God raises him up to become a judge. Those who are little in the eyes of men often become great in the sight of God. For example, think of David. Think of any of the 12 disciples. This is what God does for any who call on him and place their faith completely in him. Now, Jephthah is approached by the Ephraimites, the largest tribe, the one that Joshua had been the head of. Now, they were jealous that there was a victory that they didn't get to boast about. And they went out to Jephthah and said, "Hey, why didn't you call us over to help you?" You see, they did the same thing to Gideon, if you remember, after he defeated the Moabites without them. But in that case, Gideon refused to engage them. He answered them instead, if you remember, with diplomacy. But Jephthah, he had had enough. If they wanted the credit, he tells them, you should have put in the work. Jephthah's response is, you wouldn't lift a finger. That's why I didn't call you. If you'd had wanted to be there to fight the Ammonites, then you would have been. We looked around for you, but we only heard crickets. You'll find in life that people often want the credit for things they're not willing to put in the work for. Blue ribbons didn't exist back then, by the way. They didn't even qualify for a participation award, so simply because they didn't participate, they didn't get any credit. You remember the story of Stone Soup? I remember when I was a kid, I had one of the little Disney Golden Books, and it had Daisy Duck, who was making soup for everybody, and it was called Stone Soup. Now, she asked everybody to contribute. She said, "This is going to be the best soup you've ever had, but you need to contribute, and you only get to taste it if you take part." So, what she did is she stuck a stone in the middle of the soup, and everybody around her started to bring the ingredients she told them. She told Clarabelle Cow, "You bring me some garlic." And then she told Petunia Pig, I made that up, I can't remember all the characters, but she told her, "You bring me some celery." And someone else, she said, "You bring me some chicken stock." And okay, we'll throw Minnie in there. Minnie, she said, "Bring me some sassafras." Yeah, we'll go with that. So at the end of it, it ended up becoming probably the best soup that anyone had ever had. And of course, the stone, she said, was a secret ingredient. But the reality was, it was collaboration. It was teamwork. And the moral of the story at the end was, those who wouldn't contribute didn't get to eat it. Surely you've heard the story of the little red hen. The same kind of thing. If you didn't scratch, you don't get to eat. So how do you deal with people who want credit when they don't put the work in? Well, it depends on a lot of different things. Sometimes it depends on what you want, how you feel. But sometimes people need to hear the truth. So Jephthah, like Gideon, could have said, "You know, this isn't really worth the trouble." And he could have answered kindly with the kind word that turns away wrath. But Jephthah was used to being rejected all his life. He didn't need diplomacy. He was told all his life he was a worthless bastard. So he doesn't mince words when it comes back to telling others the truth about them. He lands an accurate account of Ephraim's reluctance to fight, but love for glory. Jephthah didn't want credit. That was the problem. He only wanted freedom. Now, Ronald Reagan, one of our former presidents in the United States, used to have a plaque on his desk that read, "There is no end of what you can accomplish if you don't care who gets the credit." After all, the credit should go to God. Jephthah made a vow to God because he knew that there was no way out of this without God's help. It was really God who got the credit. He alone, though, had the faith to rise up, which is why everybody at the end of the story gave him rulership over the city of Gilead. He may have been the son of a prostitute, the family's dark, deep secret, the proverbial skeleton in the closet, but God always has a way of making the last first and the first last. In the kingdom economy of God's values, faith is what matters. And Jephthah had faith, plenty of it. He even gets an honorable mention in Hebrews 11. And what more shall I say? I do not have time to tell about Gideon, Barak, Samson, Jephthah, about David, Samuel, and the prophets, who through faith conquered kingdoms, administered justice, and gained what was promised, who shut the mouths of lions, quenched the fury of the flames, and escaped the edge of the sword, whose weakness was turned to strength, who became powerful in battle, routed foreign armies, women received back their dead, raised to life again. There were others who were tortured, refusing to be released so that they might gain an even better resurrection. Some faced jeers and flogging and even chains and imprisonment. They were put to death by stoning. They were sawed in two. They were killed by the sword. They went about in sheepskins and goatskins, destitute, persecuted, and mistreated. The world, verse 38 of Hebrews 11, was not worthy of them. They wandered in deserts and mountains, living in caves and in holes in the ground. And get this, these were all commended for their faith, yet none of them received what had been promised, since God had planned something better for us, so that only together with us would they be made perfect. I don't care about getting credit, but I'd sure like to be mentioned in that company. How about you? Oh, before we go, there is kind of an amusing story here. Because this was civil war, and you didn't really have a way of telling one Israelite from another, there was a regional dialect that allowed the people of Gilead to say the word Shibboleth, just like that. But the tribe of Ephraim was not able to say it quite the same. In fact, every time they tried to say Shibboleth, they ended up coming out like Sibboleth. So when the armies of Ephraim got their butts handed to them and they had to go back over the Jordan to their country, the men of Gilead had a little trap set up. Hey, I'll let you over the water if you can say Shibboleth. And the guy would try as hard as he could to get Shibboleth, and they'd kill him dead. Now, I know this story probably is not meant to be amusing, and I've been reading this ever since I was a teenager, and I'm sorry, but I do find it funny. In fact, I can remember being a teenager, and we used to say to each other, Shibboleth, Shibboleth, just to make sure that, hey, you're on the right side. But this was important because it helped distinguish them in a time of civil war. Now, we're told that Jephthah, before he dies, he only reigns 6 years. And if you remember, we see a downward spiral pattern. The times of bondage are getting longer, and the times of release are getting shorter. And, as we said before, the reign of the judges are getting shorter too. It just seems to be getting worse and worse. Well, hey, we're going to have to leave it on that kind of cliffhanger today. So read Judges chapter 12. And as you do, remember, it's Shibboleth, not Sibboleth.
Join us next time as we continue the journey, one chapter at a time. And remember, faith comes by hearing, and hearing through the word.